cliffcentral.com.
That is correct. That 80s show is on today, and you can hear more of it, get to grips with a bit of nostalgia a little later on. Now, the World Economic Forum expects the annual issuance of green bonds to exceed $1 trillion in 2023. That's next year. That's double 2021's figure. But what are they? What are these green bonds, and how do they help solve South Africa's power crisis? On the latest episode of Future Impact from Investec, you can learn more about green bonds and how they're funding wind and solar plants in South Africa, and they're available wherever you get your podcasts. Go and listen to it. Future Impact from Investec. It's a really cool series. I played you the introduction to one of the episodes just the other day, and they're all beautifully produced and really, really chock full of information that you may want to know. So go and take a look at them ASAP. We've got Ben Karpinski with us. We'll be joined by Jack Parrow a little later on. And Ben and I were just talking about like romance and whether men or women are better at romance. And it's not an easy one to just define. There's not going to be a straightforward answer to this. Ben's point is that men have had to learn to be romantic because that's what keeps women and gets women interested. And I think that's a good point. But but women respond to the romantic stuff, and I got into a whole anthropological discussion around this because they're looking for signs. They're looking for signs that the man can care for them. It's much harder to figure out that someone can care for you than it is to figure out that they're attracted to you. It's obvious when a man is attracted to a woman. Women can pick that up from a mile away. They can sense if a man is attracted to them. However, it's much, much harder to work out whether that man is actually going to care for them and whether they can make an investment of time in that guy, because, as I said earlier, the cost for them of making a bad decision is much, much higher than it is for a guy. So that's why romance matters to them.
It does. I think there's another couple of sub-issues in that, but ultimately it's about high value, right? And there's some really good comments about if you've got a really good home or if you're very confident and you're settled with yourself, you create that high value. So before we went in the break, your perfect analogy about, like, you see a woman who's made an effort and she looks really great, and there's a guy in tracksuit pants,
Alcoholic pants. I saw this on Wednesday night. So Vincent says any guy who goes to a restaurant in tracky pants gave up on life a long time ago. Fuck's sake,
a long time ago.
And South African men, I don't believe, are very good at keeping up the standard. Once they think they've bagged a woman, a wife, a girlfriend, or whatever, they start letting themselves go. It's a South African male trait. I've seen it happen with people I know. I've seen it happen in general. You know, they get the beer boop. They stop caring about themselves. They start complaining about their wives. They become that stereotypical South African. And by the way, this goes across black, white, English, Afrikaans, rich, poor. It happens right across the board. It's a South Africanism. It may be the only thing that all South African men have in common at a certain age. And I'll be damned if I'm going to be like that. I think it is giving up on life. And I think it's very sad to see, because these women then have to put up with increasingly unattractive men, even if they have money, right? Which is a reason for a woman to stick around with a guy, even if he's ugly and unattractive and fat. But this whole idea that you should be, you know, swilling beer with your mates every weekend and complaining about the rugby or your wife, I don't think that's very attractive to women, not in the long run.
It's hugely unattractive in any sense. Like, I know this because I've been a member of three different golf courses in my life. Right. And this has been kind of like what goes on with all the people. And, but you know, you look at it like it's all about value, right? So if you're going to give up on yourself, then you're undervaluing your relationship. And then the worst thing is that these guys, again, personal experience, I'm having a bash here at guys, but these guys who are not drunk, who haven't seen their penises in about 4 years because their stomachs have now overgrown that section, these guys then have the audacity to say, yeah, you know, she's getting on a bit as well now. Hey, she doesn't look like she used to.
Well,
I've heard it so many different times.
I mean, that's something for a guy to say when he looks like, you know, he looks like a pig. But that's also why the women become like dragons. You know, again, the stereotype for the guys that I just explained, there's a stereotype for these women. Women of a certain age who've been married for a while, they look at their husbands and they go, well, he's making no effort. And then they become these dragons. They become these screeching housefraus who you know, are so unpleasant to be around, and they're constantly telling their husbands what to do because it's the only thing they can do anymore. You're like, why don't you look after the kids for 5 minutes so I can have some wine with my friends? You know, that's also horrible. And that happens on the women's side, but it's a reaction to the men not making an effort anymore.
You know, there's a very interesting comment from Richard here saying, look at you two successful married people giving out relationship advice.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Richard, I've always appreciated this sort of input, but another thing that must get seen is that if we're married men talking about something, you can't see the wood for the trees, really. It's always good to get outside opinion on things because we still see things the way that they were. And let's be honest, the way things were before you got married sometimes needs to be reminded.
Let me also say this. I mean, maybe we're objective. Maybe we're just talking shit. You may choose either of those as being your prerequisite for our opinions to matter or not. But here's the thing, Richard. I mean, we're not just talking about marriage. We're talking about people who are in relationships, whether they're for a short time or a long time. I've seen guys letting themselves go. I've seen women become these harpies and these dragons because they see their men letting themselves go. And they've both settled for less. Now, you can criticize Ben and I for not being in long-term relationships or not being particularly successful at marriage. Not that marriage is a thing about failure and success, because anyone who has been married will tell you it's 50-50 a lot of the time. But maybe we've made the right choice in not getting into those situations. And maybe you'd do well to listen.
Well, I believe I'm of higher value to anybody who I might actually be compatible with, a lot more so than 5 years ago. And also, Richard, why can't you appreciate my lived experience? Just dismissing me.
No, well, I mean, tell us about your relationship then, because you may have some insights for us and for everybody else who's listening. We can only talk about the experience we've been through. I can't absorb someone else's experience into this, and I can only talk about the things I've observed in other people. And I see this. I mean, to me, that illustration at the restaurant on Wednesday night about this woman who'd really gone to a lot of trouble. She'd made herself look pretty. She, she's doing the best she can. She's putting her best foot forward, and you could see she had her hair done, and she'd gone into some trouble. And then this slob is sitting on the other side of the table with her, and he's just not making any effort at all. I wonder if he even brushed his teeth that morning, because he seems to have given up on life. Now, he may be going through some stuff. Who knows? He may have been laid off at his job. He may be depressed. Who knows what he's going through? But my God, if you're going to go out for dinner with somebody, at least, you know, don't go out in alcoholic pants.
It's about that slight effort thing. And you're right. He probably is going through stuff. But everyone goes through stuff. It's what you do with it which makes the difference, right? So if your wife has been looking forward to going out for dinner the whole day and she's done all this, you've still got to go. You've got to consider that. Your stuff isn't just everything. She's not going to be like, oh, well, I'm doing all this, but he's going through something. So he'll look like shit. But hey, happy. No. Yep. Maybe the one time to actually spruce yourself up and make an effort with her could be the light that kind of makes you think less about the stuff you're going through. You can't just live by your excuses.
Well, I mean, speaking of excuses, Parallel Parking says, I just turned 60 and I'm ripped. No excuses, guys. Oh, that's amazing. I mean, I've seen some of these. Seen some of these
high value.
These old dudes at gym, and I say old with respect. I don't mean be ageist, because that is still one of the acceptable things that you're allowed to be a complete dick about. You know, you joke about old people and be rude about them and you can get away with it. You try that with women or with, you know, minorities or whatever, you get into huge shit. But I've seen some of these guys who are, you know, in their 60s probably, maybe even a little bit older in some cases, and they are probably made of tougher stuff than some of the people I've seen in their 20s. These guys who are like, they train hard, they eat carefully, they look after themselves, they're very mentally sharp and aware, and, you know, they're also wise, because by the age of 60, you've accumulated experience and wisdom. So, I mean, those people are valuable. I think they're interesting to watch. You're going to keep an eye on those people.
Well, that's the key word there, valuable. Try to be valuable in all that you do, and everything will be slightly happier.
Sure.
It's not science of the rocket. So there's a comment here by Molly Curry. Women are incredibly demanding. I cannot believe how much men are expected to do these days. So Molly, that's what you call being shit tested. And those are the wrong kind of women, because they're demanding things, trying to find the best suitor for their needs. But trust me, they'll never respect you.
But what are we talking about? Like, the most ridiculous example you've heard of shit testing?
Well, there will be like a variety of things depending on your culture, but it's a lot of like, you got to pay for stuff, and you've got to be there all the time to release the funds for all the things that they want to do. But if they're using you as an amusement ride, and they're using you as like a all access ticket towards things, you know, they're trying to do that with other people as well. Another shit testing is like being really unreasonable about making choices around, say, dinners or what you do in your spare time. If you constantly feel like you're on trial, not it. Move on.
You know, it's funny. Like, it seems acceptable socially to talk about how if a man just uses a woman for sex, for example, that we consider that to be like at least not very polite, and at worst probably like really awful and subjective and objectifying a woman, right? We don't look well on men who just like take advantage of a girl for sex. We don't tend to regard those people very highly. But when a woman just uses a guy for money, society applies a different set of rules. And I'm not trying to say it's false equivalence here. I'm not saying these two things are the same. It's just interesting how we treat them differently. Like, it's perfectly normal in society for you to hear about blessers and blessees, you know, and these women who will be with these older guys and they'll take their money. And obviously the quid pro quo is they'll get sex out of it, these guys. But we judge the one more harshly than the other, I think.
Yeah.
Wonder about that.
Yeah, you're right.
All right. Well, yeah, Ben, it's been fun catching up with you. We'll see you in another week's time. Hopefully, we've got a bit more of a beard going. And I'm going to welcome...
Yeah, it's a ribbon, Gareth.
Yeah.
2 weeks. We're committing this. Two
All
weeks.
Right. Done. Done. Done deal. Let's see how it goes. All right. So there's Ben Karpinski. We will catch up with him again in a couple of days' time, and we'll find out what he's been up to, what adventures. If you've got something that you want to send us email-wise, you can send it to contact@cliffcentral.com. We've got a live show this morning and lots of cool stuff happening. George Meany will be joining us a little later as well, but I'm very, very pleased to welcome back to the show after a long hiatus someone who I love talking to and someone who's always got interesting insights and lots to say about lots of things. He's also an absolute tour de force of nature. This guy is incredible. Jack Parra, an avid gamer, traveler, creator, creative director, brand ambassador, collaborator, heavy drinker, and also the undisputed king of Afrikaans rap. Jack Parra, what a man. How are you, man? So good to see you.
What an intro.
What an intro. Well, I mean, you deserve it. I'm not going to give you some shitty intro. How are you doing, man?
Thanks. Great. I grew mine especially for you.
I know you can't see it, but I am too. So I don't know if it's just a winter thing, but.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, no. I mean, I grow a beard. It takes me forever. And then people go, oh, you got a beard after they've been looking at me for like half an hour from up close. Oh, man. So let's just give people a little bit of background here because I haven't really spoken to you in a very long time. You've been busy, though. I follow you on social media, and it looks like you're having the time of your life. You are one of those people who manages to do amazing, successful things. And listen, we've been through a tough 2.5 years where entertainment has been really hard. But you are back on the road. You're doing shows. You're all over the country. You're partying your tits off. You are making products you care about. You're connecting with audiences who absolutely love you. And you're having the most fun. It's almost too good to be true. Is that what it is, or is that just how it looks to the rest of us?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's been good to be back on touring and everything opening up again. You know, it was, I think, for us musicians especially, it was a really difficult time because we were the first to close and the last to open every time.
Yeah.
So it really was a time of trying to figure out different ways of doing things. And I mean, that's why, like, we were just above and beyond just having, just trying to stay sane. It was a hustle in the last while. I'm sure it was for everyone, but it just felt like it took a little bit longer for us to get out of the hustle. But But it's been fun. It's been great to be back. I think people are starved for live music and for live venues and to go out and just to have fun again and just to mingle with other people and not be alone at their houses anymore. This is one of the projects I started in my in my lockdown.
This
is my new album.
Yeah.
So basically, like at the beginning of 2021, on my birthday, on the 22nd of February, I was like in a really bad space, just from like, you know, I was just tired of like the hustle, tired of like COVID, tired of, you know, I also forgot, you know, you think you don't, you forget how much you use like going on stage, like a rugby player uses doing sport also as a release. And, yeah. And, you know, I never really realized how much of that stress and like anxiety and all of that stuff I released through going on a stage. You know, I could have a really bad day and I could walk onto a stage and there'd be thousands of people and I'll feel better. I know it's a vain thing, but
is it also
better and it'll make me release that.
Is it fair to say that you get a lot of energy from going on stage? It's like it refills your batteries, you know? So you get rid of a lot of stress. You perform,
much.
You scream and shout, yeah. You jump up and down, you sing, you dance, but you also gain energy from the crowd. There's an actual transfer. There's a transaction that happens there.
Yeah. No, 100%. Like 100%. I just get more out of it, I'd say, than the crowd gets out of it. And I really realized that. So I was just really in a bad space. A lot of things happened. You know, it was a crazy time for everyone. So for my birthday, I gave myself this. I went to the psilocybin retreat in Eisner Forest, which is amazing, called Awaken the Journey. And then I was there for 6 days, just like kind of reconnecting just trying to figure out what's going on, just trying to lift myself out of the space I was in to kind of start creating again. And, you know, because, you know, there's nothing that blocks like creativity as like, well, depression or anything that. And it changed my life.
Were you ever susceptible to this stuff before like COVID? Had you ever been depressed?
Yeah.
This is something you've dealt with before.
Yeah, no, definitely up and downs. But I mean, I thought you meant the psilocybin. I've had a good time. The nicer way of saying it.
But you're not. I mean, you're not someone who's been who's been diagnosed with a kind of clinical depression or anything.
Oh no. I mean, I think everyone has some form of it in them. I think it's very rare to have people that are never depressed. I think just some people have obviously a clinical depression. I get that 100%.
I want to have the mushroom discussion with you in a second because that's fascinating. But this thing around depression, you know, people have this messed up idea that happy and content and balanced is the default setting, which is nonsense. Like most of us, most of the time are dealing with stuff. The human condition is not to be happy all the time. Happiness is something you aim for. Happiness is something that when you're in it, you should be very grateful for. But that's not the default.
Yeah.
You know, we beat ourselves up.
And you should be, you know.
We beat ourselves up.
You should
up
be actually
because
in,
we think,
in depression. You should also be.
Go ahead.
Use depression. It shouldn't be a thing that you. I think depression is also a thing that people always feel. You need the dark. You need the light. You need the yin and the yang. It's like a. It's, you know. It's. I think people see depression or anything like that as a negative. Sure, it's not great, but you should be using that negativity to learn how to not go back into the negativity. So I feel. That's always what I try and do. You know, I've been through stages, whether I've been clinically diagnosed with it or not, but I've been through seriously long stages of it, like months of being like down and just not struggling to get up. But, you know, you do what you do and you have to learn from those processes because then they become less. Once you've dealt with them and you figured out, and, you know, I think the mushroom, the psilocybin, it's such a powerful drug because it's such a it's for PTSD and especially I was bullied very much when I was young. And it's something that really unlocks those things in your mind, you know, Euro journeys. I've done mushrooms many a times in my life, but this was really a special one. I did like 7 grams in the Nizhna Forest and basically went to the other side and back. Mm. It was amazing. It was the best thing I've ever done in my entire life. It's really amazing. And I mean, that's why it's being used in so many countries and in so many places and in so many studies, because it really is an extremely powerful drug. You know, it's that classical thing of like the brain just having like little things, and then that brain that lights up completely. Yeah. That brain is from psilocybin, from Eurogeny. So it really opens up new pathways to memories that you've locked behind, because your brain's obviously built to, if stuff happens to you, it's able to kind of push that away.
Yeah.
You know? And I think before COVID, everyone was just, your life was so busy, so you never had to deal with all these things.
Correct.
You just kind of kept going. So then you also have to deal with all this stuff, because you're sitting and thinking. You can't just go to the bar. You can't just go this. You can't do that. And that's, I think, why a lot of people went a bit mild, or why a lot of relationships or whatever like kind of fell apart, is because of those things, because you actually had to deal with the issues. And that's I really just dealt with it, and it was amazing.
So
I'd recommend it for anyone.
Just complete the story, though. Like, how did you get to this album then? Because obviously when you've gone through all this stuff... I just want you to finish the thought, because we've done a great series
on
psychiatry and psilocybin with a professor of psychiatry.
Oh, nice.
It's undisputed. What you're saying is absolutely true. So, you know, it's not just some pedestrian opinion now that this is something. They're using it to treat people, and it's really having very profound and positive results. So how did you get to Dimona and Pila and Paranoia and Puff, Puff, Puff?
So the first one, Psalm 1, is Dimona. So I was like, when I was there, I wrote a lot of music. 99% of it I'll never release because it's too dark and too intense.
Wow.
But this song was really a special song for me, because, and if you listen to it, it's just about that. It's about the space I was in at that time. And, you know, I didn't go to write music. I actually just went to get out of that slump, and I ended up walking, as I'm walking to like something on this retreat, I would just have to sit and start writing. It would just literally just, I'm actually getting goosebumps. It's like, it would just come out of me. It was so intense. It's like, I must say, it's a really intense, it was really insane. Like just, I just quit and I had to go sit right there, sit on my phone and I would write a song. And it was, because, you know, I always see music as my form of psychiatry, because that's where I can really be truthful to myself. I can write, even if I release the song or not, I don't even think about those things. I just want to write and write. Writing, I think it's like my diary or whatever someone else would use. So it's a really powerful thing, and that's how I got to this. The Dimona song is from that, and then the whole thing was, you know, going through this. The album is called Die Geloof van Goeie Tye, or the Evangelie van Goeie Tye, the Evangelie van Goeie Tye, or
the Gospel of Good Times.
The Gospel of Good Times.
Love it.
Yeah, because it's about that, you know. And I'm obviously, I think, you know, whatever you believe in, whether you believe in a religion, or you believe in Buddha, or you believe in God, or you believe in dogs, or you believe in chocolates, whatever it is, as long as it makes you happy, that's what it's all about. And it's about really just filling your life with the things that make you happy. So that's what it's all about. It's about
I love
that
this
kind of vibe,
dude. I just love it. And I know that the last time I spoke to you, we went off on a tangent and we spoke for like an hour and a half about all kinds of shit that had nothing to do with your music. And I felt bad afterwards, because we were going to promote your latest release at the time, and I don't think we even got to it. So I felt terrible.
I love it. That's just, I like it to chat. That's why.
Well, I know, but I wanted to kind of get the mention of your latest stuff out there, because I also think you're one of those people who we love, because you're coming up with new stuff all the time, and not because you feel you have to, but because you're on this journey and we can all join you on it. It's fantastic. I mean, we get to vicariously live through you and your experiences. Now, I do want to get to all this stuff in the background of the room that you're in at the moment, because people are noticing that. So there's a lot going on in this picture.
Oh,
we've got a skateboard. We've got, what is that, a wildebeest, horns.
Yeah, that's a yeah.
Tell us what's going on in the background. That's my friend Moses. Here. What's happening here?
I'm trying to get my finger in the right places. That's my okay. So that's my Eminem backstage pass when I opened for Eminem.
Ooh.
Or my artist pass.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get my finger right, and the okay, no, it's not working. My skateboard is Moses, a friend of mine, skateboard that he did.
Right.
This is Para, one of my favorite Dutch artists.
Okay.
And then this is Frank Kozik, which is one of my favorite artists as well. He does those. I don't know if you remember back in the day, there used to be these things where there's like. Those vinyl toys, and there was always these bombs and these elephants that were smoking. He does all these things always smoke. So everything he makes, all his art, all his toys, everything always smokes. I thought it was also funny. And this is my cool recording booth.
It's one of those old phone booths.
So it's a recording booth. Yeah.
Where did you even
turning this thing like an idiot?
I know because it's mirror. You know,
I had to drive to Flippin. I had to drive to Flippin from. I live in Tambush Cliffs, so, and this guy said he had one in lockdown. I was like, I need it.
That's so amazing.
And I couldn't fly and stuff, and I drove to Middelburg to go and fix it.
Middelburg in the
like from
in the
Cape Town, like 13 hours. Yeah.
Middelburg in Mpumalanga, Middelburg.
Yeah.
Wow,
I all the way just to fetch this this flipping thing.
That's and devotion.
It was, but it was worth it. It's and because I really got it's a really it's in perfect wallet, perfect neat, as they would say.
So
and then I'm a big toy collector, so there's a lot of toys back here as well.
I love it. We should have put you. We had this thing on our show called Collectomania, where we talked about what people collect. Oof. And there's so many interesting people. Listen, interesting.
You don't
want to
even know.
No, show us your stuff. This is cool. I love this. We're getting a tour of Jack Parrow's house. This is awesome. So are those all toys? Are those like
this little light?
Are those like what? Funko Pops or something? Gosh, what are those?
No, these are Masters of the Universe.
Ah, awesome. Awesome.
So
awesome.
That's the Castle Grayskull.
Oh, man. Look at that. Yay. You got two different Castle Grayskulls.
Up at the top, I got some. Yeah, this is my office.
That's so
cool. Yeah, I've got my...
Trust no suits, lurking class. That's awesome. God, this is nice.
And then some more stuff there.
Listen, how's the liquor business going? Because you launched that brandy, which has been tremendous. I mean, let's just talk about that for a second, because that's so different to what everyone else is trying to do. And I know there are a bunch of people in America who've launched their own, of entertainment, launched their own liquor businesses. But how's that been working out, the Brandewijn?
Yeah, it's lacking, man, but I'm actually more excited about the new flipping thing. Brandewijn's always lacking now. I've been in Brandewijn for so long. I've been drinking Brandewijn for so long. I needed to sell it as well.
Yep.
But the main one is the new one that I just did, which is really flipping. I'm so excited about it. It's doing so well as well. I'm so thankful. But it's in lockdown. I was like, you know, flipping me and my friend, his name's Magic. And he was like, we were like, you know, it's always such a mission if you go to a party and say someone wants to drink red wine and you want to drink white wine. You don't want to go there with flipping six bottles, clink, in this bag. You look like an alcoholic. But if you go there with a Boxwein, it's fine. But you also don't want to go with 2-3 liters of Boxwein.
Yes.
So we were like, why isn't there like smaller boxes? Or why didn't we... Because it looks weird, obviously, if it's a 3-liter box with a tap, but we like that tap vibe. So why don't we combine it? Why isn't that? There must be someone who's combined it. Looked online, no one's done it ever. So we were like, flipping, we're going to do it. So that's we awesome. Got like really like two, it's a 1.5 liter of red wine and a 1.5 liter of white wine in one box with two taps on the side. It's the coolest thing. It's called the Yeltsin Spiel type.
Amazing.
And you know how long it took us to get it cleared, because I wish I had a box now. Would you have a photo? I think that's
like, yeah.
Because we were like, no, to the wine board. Yeah. So you can see that it's got like a tap on each side. So you can put, and it's some of the best wine in the country. The winemaker that made this wine is one of the best in the world. So it's really, really high quality wine. It's really, like, it speaks for itself in that way. And it just looked really cool. You know, I always think wine is such a boring thing. It can be such a boring thing with, like, it's so, all the wine labels tend to look the same. It's like never, it's like always feels like such an uppity. We were just like, go for it.
Yeah, especially with, you know, these people who tell you, oh, I can pick up like the notes of like cedar wood in it. It's definitely got a little, you know, a small bit of earthiness mixed with some vanilla. You know, sort of high notes. You're like, yeah, bullshit, I'm like, man.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. No, it fucking tastes like wine. That's what it tastes
the,
like to me.
The, like, especially because the bored housewives who are drinking it at their lunch club on a Friday are really testing it for that stuff. They're just trying to get drunk and forget about how boring their husbands are. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. Exactly. So this is like, so this is basically, so now, and also now you want to go to a party, you want to drink red wine. Someone else wants to, your chummy or your girl or your boyfriend wants to drink like a red wine. Mm. You've got both in one box and you're not wasting either. You know, it's always like, you know, wine can be such a thing that you, that ends up being so wasteful because then you take like, if you say, if you go to someone, you take a box of wine and you don't finish 3 liters. No one keeps that last bit of wine. You know, now we've got 2 1.5s in one box and you know, even like the guys from the wine board, we were going like, Leicester-y, so we want to do a box. It's got a white wine in it and a red wine. And they were like, Rosé. No, we're like, no, it's got a white bladder and a red bladder. It's got 2 wines, 1 box. Like a Rosé. No, not in the same fucking. It took us forever to just tell them. That's why if you look at the front, it says red wine, white wine.
Yeah.
So the logo, Hilton Spilter, is actually on the back because we were like, fuck it. We can't keep going.
You have to explain this over and over again.
Make these people figure out like what it is.
So it's like I think why white this, wine, I think wine. Why this stuff works, and I don't want to get into like the psychology of it. What I do want to get into the psychology of is like what kind of experience you had on that 7 grams of mushrooms, because that I think people will be interested in. But what I love about you launching all of this stuff is that it's so authentically you. You know, it's stuff that you do in your life anyway. And you drink Brannewijn, so you've got a Brannewijn. You've thought about like going to these parties where you have bottles of red and bottles of white, and you want to now sort out the solution. Like it's real. It doesn't come from you're trying to launch products so you can make money. You're actually trying to do stuff that fits into your life.
Yeah, I mean, I never ever, I think that's even with the sponsor, with my sponsors and the people I work with and the creative stuff I do, it's always stuff that I believe in. I'll never post anything or I've been always heavy about that or something that's not on brand or doesn't work for me or that I've tested and I actually like. Because I feel that's the quickest way of losing your for lack of a word, like street cred or whatever it is.
Authenticity.
Like, so people don't trust. Sorry, I'm also Afrikaans. I don't always know the words, but you get what I'm saying. So then, and then people stop believing in anything you're saying. So I've really always tried to be as close to this. Only do the stuff I actually like and actually want to do and actually believe in. So that's worked for me so far. So I keep at it.
So listen, this thing with mushrooms, it's something that a lot of people are doing. A lot of people are trying. It's kind of become a bit mainstream. And I know everybody talks about it now as if, you know, it's just a thing that people, it's very new. I mean, people have only really been doing this for the last while in open public society and talking about it like we're talking about it now. But there are differences.
Yeah.
Like what you talked about now, you can do these things recreationally. But what you're talking about is like, it's a ritual, it's a ceremony, it's a journey that you go on. You take a certain amount under supervision. You're doing it in an environment where you want to learn something, you want to discover something, you're seeking an answer maybe, or you're just opening yourself up to an experience. And I don't know which one it was for you, but taking 7 grams and then having this pretty profound experience, which brought on the album and a whole lot of other things. Like if you try to explain to people what happened to your brain, and you kind of hinted at it when you said it opens up new neural pathways and your brain lights up and all of that stuff. But for people who've never done this, try to explain what actually it feels like, because there's still some people who are very skeptical of this, and maybe you can explain it in a way that'll just stop them from judging, or at very least make them interested in perhaps trying something like this themselves, or perhaps put them off completely. But you go for it. You explain the way it happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's different, as you say, there's different ways of doing it. You know, I've done it many times from a fun point of view when I was younger. And then I know there's also people that do it. I'm a very private person in many ways, and I didn't want to do it. You can do it in circles with like people so that you can go to like a one day experience, and you can do like and there will be a circle and there will be someone who kind of oversees it, and then you could do, but I don't want to do that. This, the great thing about this one is you're the only patient. So it's you there for 6 days. They might look after you in the middle of the night in the forest. And it's they make food for you. It's really like you've got like a nice little bungalow there in the forest. You've got everything you need. You can, like, for example, a lot of places tell you to put your phone off, but you don't have to put your phone off. You can stay connected. You can do whatever. It's like just there for you, like,
right?
How you want to do it. And then you kind of build up to this journey, that you go, they kind of chat to you so you can make sure. So it's like a process. They take 3 days to kind of see if you can do it and if you're ready to do it and if you're in the right mindset to do it, because they don't want to throw you into anything that you may be not ready for.
Right.
And then you also have 3 days afterwards, which I think is very important, which they tell you how to deal with the stuff you saw, what happens. And, you know, it's also crazy because it's like a dream. Because I've done it also many times and it made so much sense. It's like a dream. If you don't talk about it straight away, you kind of forget that it's that what you saw. So it's about, you know, if you go and then you've got this psychiatrist, a psychologist and stuff just sitting there with you. And really cool. Like, it's not like a weird, like sitting in a lab coat or anything. It's like a vibe. And then, you know, you see like flipping whatever it is. You know, my dad died when I was younger, when I was about 24. And, you know, I don't think I ever dealt completely with that. So I saw him in my mind in the forest, and I walked after him, and they had to come fetch me out of the Nysna forest. I'm like barefoot with, like, I'm like, dude. But that type of stuff, you know, and then they tell me what that means and how this goes. And that's among many things. So basically, if I'd say how it exactly looked at it from that level of journey, it's like, you know, if you rub your eyes really quickly and you get those colors, and that's kind of how it starts. It's just like you just see colors and you just see that stuff kind of becoming more and more into forms. And then those forms become your things. So it might turn into a snake, and then it's the snake is like hanging over you, and it's not and also the crazy thing about this journey is, so it's in this place that's like glass all the way around, so you can see the forest around you. You're lying, there's like a kachel, like a fireplace, rocks with the, and you're lying there. And there's surround sound speakers all the way. So it's like a shaman. So the one guy's like a shaman, but he's playing music for you. So he's taking you in and out of this journey. So he's looking after you. So it's really good, important, you know, if you're doing those circles with all those people, the problem with that is they're playing just they can't cater to every single person. So someone might be freaking out next to you, and you might be laughing, and another person might be crying, and it's like, it's so much. So this thing, they kind of, it's like a TV game. And I'm a big gamer, as you said at the start. It's like, it takes you into this darkness. And then as you're into it and you're really connecting with this dark stuff, and he sees you kind of now too deep, then, or you're going into, he wants to get you out, then you'll play like happy music and you'll hear, because it's around sound, you're like, it will still be like thunder clouds here. And then you'll hear like sunshine and birds coming from there. I'm getting goosebumps again, and then it comes like closer, and then it's like, oh, and then it's happy, and you're like happy. Happy thoughts. It's amazing.
I just knew you'd be able to explain it and put it into words better than most people, because you also have this creative brain, and I mean, you write music, and the music is so important in all of this, because it does connect you to you know, the good and the bad and the ugly. But I'm also, you mentioned the gaming, and someone asked in the questions earlier, and I can't ignore what people want to know. So what games do you play? Because somebody said, what kind of games are you into?
I'm on PS5 now. I recently got it after such a long time. Through a company called Kudu, which is really cool. They're really nice. So I play at the moment. I'm back. I don't get that much time to play games because I'm away. So I don't want to play anything, you know. I play Call of Duty, but I play campaign more than online, because, you know, you're going, if you don't, we never play it. you get behind so quickly. It's like anything. If you like not playing like sport and you don't practice all the time, when you go online, they just fucking kill you in like a second. So so I'm playing, I do, at the moment, very moment, I'm playing, I'm going to start playing Stray, which is this cat game in the, like, in the future. And then I'm playing Call of Duty Cold War. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also playing Rocket Balls, which is fun. Rocket League. Rocket League is like a soccer, but you got these little carts that you ride, drive, which is pretty fun.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I'm more of a story mode game because I have to, it has to be kind of pick up and play. I can't, because sometimes I won't play for 3 weeks, but then I'll play for like a week straight. So yeah. And then I play a lot of games on my phone, obviously, because I'm traveling a lot, like Clash of Clans and Looney Tunes and like stuff like that. Yeah.
Have you done any international travel since COVID ended, since lockdown ended, all of that stuff came to grinding halt?
Yeah. I just did Parafest in Holland in awesome. April this year. I was there for that. They were both sold out. We actually have a second venue now. Dude. So we have the one in Utrecht. We have the first one. And then we have one in Groningen as well now on the second night. And
amazing.
Then, and they were amazing. Like 4,500 people. It was really rad to have that in another country. I'm so thankful for that, that the Dutch are my vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw my dad at some like three London shows as well, which are also amazing. Yeah, so it was really cool. A little in and out. Yeah,
and I'm glad
to have gotten out because you know I was going to go to London. I was sitting literally my bags. I was flying the next morning. My bags. I was so excited just to fucking go on mission, and my bags were packed by my door. And then my friend's like at like 11 at night. She's like, "Listen here, just double check. I think you guys just got red listed." I'm like, "What? No, it's impossible. I'm flying tomorrow morning. There's not a fucking chance." And then it's like, go online. And now I can't ask my management and my bookers are all sleeping. So I can't, now I'm sitting there fucking all night. Am I now flying to London tomorrow morning? And then I was like, not allowed to go. So I had to cancel my show, or postpone my show last minute. But luckily everyone is so, understood so much that all those people we didn't have one return. All those people came to the show then like 5 months later when we could finally fucking go.
I've seen you doing your shows here in South Africa, and I've also seen like lots of your stuff on social media, and everybody reckons that they're your friend because you're so approachable and easy to talk to. People love meeting you. They love taking a picture with you, all of that stuff. It's not just about watching you actually perform. So it means that you have to put in the time, and you don't just go and do a gig for an hour and then bugger off. And I've seen like everybody's like, "Oh, he's the coolest guy." I mean, when I used to DJ, I made an effort to do that too, because really, like, if you're not connecting with people, what's the point? But do you have a close circle of really good friends who you get to see often? Because when you're touring and you're doing shows every weekend, you don't really get to see your people. You know, while I was doing all that stuff, I was literally out of town at least one day of every weekend, and the other day I was in Joburg or Pretoria, so I didn't really get to have. Like my people around me much. And since I've stopped doing that, those are the people I see the most.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main thing is I get to see. So I've got Cape Town's nice, I think, in that way, because it's such a small town.
Mm.
Everyone's always close to each other. So, and you know, I have like one of my best friends staying. I've got like flats at the bottom. They've just opened a bar here. They're from Joburg. They used to own Blondies in Joburg. They opened a Blondies in Cape Town now. So they've come down. He's staying downstairs here. So while he's looking for a place, so I've got him around. So I've got these two flats, which makes it really nice. It's always like my friends are always around.
Nice.
As you know, I think my friends is also spread quite wide because I've been touring for 13 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like always, you know, I'm part of a cool bar down here, House of Machine. So I go down there a lot and I hang out there and people come there. So, you know, it's just about, you know, I think it's more, that's what I like about Cape, because everyone's always on a mission around. So if you go around, Joburg is great. I love Joburg, but it's big. So if you have to kind of tell people, I'm going here now, here it kind of, you just bump into people at the bloody Woolworths because everyone goes to the same places. It makes it feel more like you always get to see people. And I also have, my house is really set up for entertainment over the years. It's all I've lived here for like 13 years.
But I mean, with you working,
it's become like a place.
Yeah, but with you working all the time, you probably don't get to use it as much as you'd like to.
No, I'm pretty much off in the week though. I'm walking to open for my trainer just the door, so it doesn't stand in the rain. It's raining here, but I'm still talking to you. So I had this is my trainer Brendan.
Hey Brendan, where is he? There he is. Okay.
and then. So I have a lot of braais. People just know that we braai a lot. Even if people are sometimes people will come here, I'll be sleeping and I'll open the door for them and they'll go braai on their own and I'll see them and they'll just go on the side. Yeah, I've got like a nice side entertainment area. So that's how my friends are.
You said
like
you're Tamboers Kloof. So I mean, there are a lot of beautiful houses up there, and it's a nice neighborhood. But do you have old neighbors or young neighbors? And do they mind when you have like raucous parties?
No, my neighbors are super cool. They know me by now. I think that in lockdown, they knew I had the biggest music system, so I was like, my stoop goes like quite far out.
Yeah.
So I put like speakers on the front, and then I would like play music, and people would have like Chardonnays in the street and stuff, and like it was really fun. And when I think the nice, that's what I also liked about lockdown, you know, before lockdown, I barely knew, like I knew the people like obviously right next to me and across the road. Now I know everyone, you know.
Same here.
We brought everyone so much together.
Yeah.
We had like braais and stuff in the street, and it was like, it was such a joy, bro. Like just to that reconnection, because people get so trapped behind their walls as it is. And just to have that kind of, see the people that you actually in your neighborhood, and now, you know, like you now it's like, you know, if you want to borrow a cup of sugar, you could actually message someone and like, cool, and they'll bring you a cup, and there'll be like 10 people on the, I'll be like on the WhatsApp group, like, can I get, and just, do you have like lemons? And there'll be like 50 people with lemons, like that's ready amazing. To give lemons, you know,
it must be so great. Wild. I think it would be so cool if you're living on a street and you've got like your normal day-to-day life, and then your next door neighbor's Jack Parrow, and he sends a message saying, can I borrow some sugar? I fucking love that. Listen, dude, it's always nice to see you. I'm so glad that we got to catch up a little bit. It never feels like enough time, and I promise we'll talk again soon, but keep delivering all the goods, because you really are the best at it, and we love catching up with you. So thanks for being on the show.
I like it. You too, man. I really love it. It's always such a like a chat, really. It's like something I look forward to. It's always like such a like a cock bra.
And one day, sometime in the very near future, I'm going to come to one of your braais, or you must come to one of my parties, and we do something in person.
Please. Cool.
Yeah,
please. Be amazing.
Yeah, let me know when you're around.
Wish
and I'll
me luck.
The same.
It's like I have to go train in the rain now, so wish me fucking luck.
Good luck, man. Cheers. There's Jack Parrow, everybody. What a guy. Unbelievable. It's always good to catch up with somebody. He's so real, and I just love talking to him. He's awesome. And another person who's real, who we love talking to, is George Meany, and he is here. He is live. He is in his studio at home, which is looking fresher than ever. How's it, George?
Hey, Gareth. I was enjoying the conversation with Jack Parrow so much that I said to him, oh, Sherbert,
I know.
Click on the joint studio link.
I was looking at the time and thinking, what, is George going to ignore us today? Is he busy? I wasn't sure whether you were going to join us. So I just kept talking to him. Anyway,
I was watching. Thinking,
he's great.
Thinking I'm in the studio, but I'm actually not. So you have to click on your link.
There we go.
But I'm here. I'm here.
So listen, George.
I actually saw Jack Parrow in the Guns N' Roses. I think he opened for the Guns N' Roses concert in South Africa a couple of years ago.
Amazing. He's such a good guy. And what a performer, hey. That energy is just next level. He's fantastic at it.
So, I don't mean to bring the mood down, mm-hmm. but I suppose it's a little bit of a positive. I don't know if you've read that the government is proposing a price cap for 93 petrol or 93 octane petrol.
No, I'm really glad you brought this up because you're the only person who'll be able to explain it to us. So what does this actually mean for the consumer? What does it mean for you? What does it mean for me if we have a car that we prefer to put 93 into? What does it mean?
So the cap. So first, let me tell you that the government sat on this thing for about 3 or 4 weeks because the actual letter from the minister was dated in the end of June-ish, and it's only gone into the Gazette now in the last couple of days. So they sat on it for about a month, which is, you know, why don't know? Why can't we move faster with these things? Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. Second thing is, it's going to potentially bring relief because what a price cap means is that there's no price regulation. That's the difference. At the moment, the government sets the price. They say you will sell petrol for 25 Rand or 24 Rand a litre, and that can't vary except for maybe an inland versus the coast.
Which is kind of crazy because what other products in the world do we let government decide the value of? It shouldn't really be up to them. You know, you should be able to get petrol cheaper at some places and other places can charge more because they have more traffic maybe.
Well, I mean, I think when it comes to most products in the world, the market should drive the price.
Right.
I mean, general economics tells you that demand and supply drives the price.
Yeah.
And only if you get into a monopolistic situation. So if there's only one business that sets the price, then government should step in because you could have, you know, overpricing or price taking.
No, you could have price gouging and all that stuff. I agree. I just think like this is not a government we would trust with very much considering how badly they've managed so many other things. So I'm starting to look at everything they do and going, well, why are they the ones who are deciding on this? So, all right, with 93 being capped, does that mean that is the upper limit for how much it's going to cost?
Yes, it does mean it's the upper limit, but there's another thing at play, and that is because they're setting a cap, it means that there's no low point. So that's the actual objective.
Hmm.
So you can discount the price of petrol as much as you like as a fuel retailer.
Okay.
So that's effectively what a cap means. It's good. Now don't focus on the cap. Focus on, well, you don't have to, you know, put the price up to that cap.
Right.
It just means there's a cap.
All right. So
fuel retailers only make, and I think herein lies the rub, only make 2.28 Rand per litre.
Yeah, you know, and that's a small margin if you consider like how difficult it is to run a fuel station. You have to be open 24 hours a day. You've got to employ people. Security's an issue. People don't pay. They drive off after filling their cars. You have to open a shop so you can make ends meet. It's tough to run a fuel station. That's why I found it really stupid and ridiculous that Joe Biden the other day was like blaming the fuel prices on the petrol stations, the individual gas station owners in America. I was like, what the hell's wrong with you, old man? You really have lost your mind. They don't make that much money.
No. 2.28 Rand on, you know, 2.50 Rand, 2.60 Rand a litre, depending on which octane and region you're in.
Right.
So 2.28 Rand per litre, which is under 10% margin, you have to pump hundreds of thousands of liters in order to really cover the costs of that filling station. So what is the effect, so the net effect of this? Yes, some retailers might, that pump high volumes might just discount it down to down to almost zero margin. And the reason they might do that is because the shop makes a lot more margin than the fuel does.
Right.
And all businesses have shops, right?
Okay.
You know, when you're missing bread at 10 o'clock at night and you need to go and have a sandwich, you go down to the filling station.
In the end, this might be very good news for consumers. It might result in a couple of savings here and there.
It might, but there's a bigger problem, and that it might also translate into job losses. Because can you imagine now if you say, all right, I'm going to make no money on fuel. So I'm going to discount the whole 2.28 Rand in order to get you into my shop, but I'm also not going to have petrol attendants. You're going to have to fill up your car yourself.
I just don't know if South Africans are like responsible enough. We'll probably spill petrol all over the floor and then light it and catch fire and blow the whole place up. So I don't know if they want that to happen.
No, I mean, I agree with that, but it's quite possible that fuel retailers could get creative order to reduce the fuel. So that's, good thing in some ways. I think good thing in most ways that there's no regulation. like you pointed out earlier on.
It's good to know.
There could be some downsides, but at the end of the day, it's not going to halve your petrol bill. It's not going to come down to 11 rand a liter again.
George, you're the only one who we can take seriously on these subjects. We'd never know with other people. Might be bullshitting us. What else have you got?
Exactly. So a couple of other lighthearted things. The one is, did you know that in America there is a secret card that you can be a member of, an organization you can be a member of, that gets you out of law-breaking activity? So listen to this.
What?
It's called a PBA courtesy card. Fully legal, right? PBA courtesy card. It stands for Police Benevolent Association. Nearly every police officer carries one of these cards in the United States. And typically the card follows with the words, the bearer of this card is a supporter of the PBA and you should try to extend every courtesy possible. It doesn't mean that you're going to get out of what you've just got yourself into. But what happens is the police officer comes to your car and says, license and registration, please. I mean, you've seen that in the movies. That's real.
Sure.
And what the person holding the PBA card does is he pulls out his license and registration card and with it, the PBA card, and he hands it to the police officer.
Sounds good.
So there's no words exchanged. And the police officer knows that this individual is part of the PBA organization, which he is also a part of.
I like this, but we already have that in this country. It's like if you know a politician, it's the same thing, right?
Or if you have a couple of blue notes.
That's true. Yes, good point. Correct. Not that we're endorsing that kind of behavior, George. You and I are very careful not to be associated with that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
But yes, it does happen. We've got to be realistic about it. Sure.
Yes, you have to be realistic about it. It does happen. And then very, very lastly, what do you do if you need to pee while driving, Gareth? Have you ever needed to pee so badly?
Well, I mean, luckily, you know, usually you're in town, so you can always pull into a petrol station and use their toilets. Or maybe you, you know, you're on a distant rural road. You just pull over to the side of the road and you can pee there if you have to. You just hope that not too many cars drive past you and hoot at you. But yeah, I mean, it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen people peeing on the side of the highway in town. So it's easy for a guy. Well, it's much difficult for a woman.
Welcome to South Africa.
No.
So, you know, I think one of the things that you shouldn't do is let your assets be exposed when you're peeing. I see so much of that. It's so disrespectful to everybody else. It's the most irritating thing for me. But a couple of other things you can do. I've got some lighthearted ones, and then I've got a serious one. The one is wear an adult diaper.
Oh, my God, no.
Wear an adult diaper.
Not a chance. I would rather be humiliated publicly and have everybody hooting at me and stopping and, you know, giving me hand signals and all kinds of things than pee in an adult diaper. I think that's so demeaning and undignified.
I absolutely agree. No. The other is you can pee in a Ziploc bag. Apparently, a very large Ziploc bag is quite effective.
Dude,
holding pee.
All right. I'm going to try and take this seriously. What else?
Okay, and then the very serious one. If you really, really, I keep one of these in my airplane. Okay, because when you're in the sky and there's nowhere to go, I've never used it.
Okay,
but when you're in the sky and there's nowhere to go, you got to go.
Sure,
there is a product online in South Africa called Got to We. So the word got, the number two, and W-E-E, the word we.
Right.
Got to We. Go Google it. I promise you it is a real thing.
Okay. And what does it look like? How does it work?
Well, it's like a little, almost like a pad, and it's got an absorbent material like a nappy. And and all you do is you put this over your pee area and you pee into
pee
it
area.
And it sucks all of the pee into the Got to We device.
You hope so. You hope so. You hope you don't have spillage. All right. Well, you taught me something, George. I didn't know about these things. So every day is a learning day on this show. and especially on Fridays when we have you on. All right. Thank you very much, George Meany. That is all we've got time for this morning. CliffCentral.com wrapping up this Friday. Hope you have a good weekend. And thank you, Borge, says Sanele. Of course, what would you do without Borge on a Friday? And we will be back on Monday morning, 6 a.m., bright and early. Big thank you to all of our guests and to you for joining us today. Like and subscribe, please, before we go. Otherwise, it doesn't count. Nobody cares then. Got to like and subscribe. And don't miss George's show on Monday, the Auto Trader podcast. They've always got interesting stuff. If you like what he said today, that's just like a taste of what they do on their full show every week. Make sure you don't miss it. Cheers, everybody. Have a good weekend. Bye. CliffCentral.com.